Okay, gang, welcome back. And it's always nice to know that there are many of you who are scattered all around this besieged planet, because your perspective is one that most Americans could never acquire. You see it from out there, and that's really nice. Gives you a much better feeling, I would hope, in some cases, those of you who are not in the middle of this cauldron of hell that we call the formerly United States of America. It's gone. Gone, gone, gone. Now, one of the things I heard yesterday, I think I ran the story, there are now over 600 fires in, I believe, mostly Quebec, Canada, and they're spewing smoke. And there was a story today about somebody in Georgia, all the way down in Georgia, complaining about the smoke. Well, it's not just smoke, and I think many of you know where we're going with this. It has to do with Fukushima. And my dear friend and colleague of over a dozen years now, Yoichi Shimatsu. Yoshi and I have covered this as well as probably anybody on the planet. And I say that with all humility. It's the truth. We know what's going on. And when these trees burn, they are exuding, releasing radiation, radioactivity. Radioactivity doesn't go away. It's just relocated. It's brought over here on the jet stream. It's brought over here on the North Pacific Current. And it is rained down upon North America. And when it goes into the ground, the plants uptake it, and the radiation is still there. And it's in the plants. And when they burn, it's released into the air again. So that's what you're getting, along with many other chemicals that you don't want to even know about. Yoshi, welcome back.
Well, thank you. Nice to be on rents.com again. It's been a hellacious time, as you say. And where I'm sitting between Albuquerque and Phoenix and Albuquerque, is sort of where I can look overhead every day, because this is where the dip ends. The radioactive stream of clouds on the jet stream comes down from your area in the northwest of the West Coast. It sort of streams down, and then it turns right over my head. You know, it passes Albuquerque, and it turns over my head, and you can see the clouds turning and going toward Texas, and then from there upward toward the East Coast, all the way up the East Coast into Canada, where is dumping all whatever radioactive nucleotides are still hovering from Fukushima and compounding these fires in Canada. So it's very interesting. It's sort of like being at the bottom of a roller coaster and watching all the kids screaming and maybe a few falling out. You know, so it's that
That's
kind of sensation.
Analogy.
It's very weird after being in Japan to be here right at this fulcrum of the destruction of North America. Yeah, it's weird. Yeah. To just look up in the sky every day and see that happening.
It's true. It's very true.
And again, you know, we had those great fires of what, about about 6 years ago in that time frame, burning down the Western Canada, the whole down the West Coast, torching the Sierras and all that, striking lightning in Southern California. And now to see finally this effect coming across all the way across the continent on this dip, you know, on this roller coaster dip, and going up to Canada, the Quebec area, Labrador and all, and just burning the place apart. Yeah, I mean, it's so much radioactivity. And then they've also, I've written this before for you, there's a lot of native radioactivity because the it's all happening along the St. Lawrence Seaway, which goes from the Great Lakes to the Atlantic coast, and that's where all the fires are occurring. And the St. Lawrence Seaway is one of the most radioactive places on the planet, because we've got, 38 nuclear reactors on the Canadian and on the American side in the Great Lakes. So there's
that many. I didn't know there were that many there.
Yeah, I've met cancer victims from the St. Lawrence Seaway who told me they've got these huge power lines that are just buzzing and humming from the power plants, and also the water, obviously, that they're dependent on. And this one fellow I met, he just had gotten out of a massive series of operations and had lost all his hair and had patches on his head. And he had come to Asia to vacation, and he had no idea how long he's going to live, and then he had liver problems, all this. It's very common along the Seaway. It's got one of the highest cancer rates in the world because of the nuclear power plants and also the overhead electrical lines. He said you can hear them humming. He said, it's a very scary place to live, and the Canadian government isn't telling anybody about the death rate along that whole area, which seems like, and this goes right through Montreal, you know, Canada, Labrador and on, and it feeds into the North Atlantic. So this is moving into, the Greenland area, into the Nordic countries, down into Ireland, England, France. So this is, it's a massive problem that no one talks about. The Canadian government is in denial because they've been, had a nuclear program. No. You know, they, basically America's first round of, nuclear submarines, nuclear energy came out of Canada. In fact, Jimmy Carter was up there. He was a captain, really young guy, and one of the plants there had a meltdown, and he volunteered to jump into the reactor with the Aqualung and go to the bottom to pick up this cable that had to be picked up and brought up, otherwise the whole thing would have melted down. And he apparently suffered some terrible effects from that, as we see in the later life.
How interesting. Wow.
Yeah,
I didn't know this.
This was for, he was an aide, he was a captain, but he was an aide to Admiral Hyman Rickover, who was a father. He was a Jewish admiral and very controversial in the Navy, but he was the one who built with General Dynamics, also owned by a Jewish fellow. Supposedly Hillary Clinton's father ran General, the real father, not the lawyer. The lawyer was the father's lawyer. He built the American nuclear fleet. So that's how Jimmy Carter got advanced in the Navy and all that. And also Navy intelligence.
This is very interesting. Jimmy Carter served on the first nuclear-powered submarine we had, I think.
Yeah.
I think that he served on that. Yeah.
He's now he's a nuclear engineer. Yeah.
Correct. He actually, he did that aqua, he dove into the bottom of that water and did that?
There was no Canadian guy. They were just so scared that there was going to be a meltdown that, you know, I mean, these are nuclear rods in this thing, right, bubbling away.
Yes.
And the thing was jammed. The whole mechanism was jammed and just heating up. And Jimmy says, if no one else going to do it, I'll do it. You know, and the old peanut farmer dove in there. It's a heroic thing. And that's how he rose in the ranks. You know, he was like a Superman sort of for doing that. You know, he's just greatly admired for his just guts. And the fact that he actually grabbed that cable and swam up to the top. Yeah. So it's one of the lesser known facets of history of how this man became president. You know, that's why he became president. You know, he did that one feat, a superhuman feat. So this has been going on a long time. So Canada, you know, like I say, they've been forewarned. I would say that incident was kind of heralded this massive wave of fires that's gone out of control up there, ripping in place. And the problem is that's going to compound the radioactive problem that's already present on the Great Lakes, St. Lawrence Seaway. And it's going to be very, very terrible for Canadians, very Pacific country, the kind of ultimate colonials of the British Empire, very obedient. Mind their own business, don't speak out, don't protest. And it is tragic. It's like a whole bunch of sheep caught in a forest fire. You know, it's really sad. You know, I have very good Canadian friends and all, so it's very sad to see that, happening to such innocent-type people, as opposed to very hardened Americans. Americans are tough people as survivors, you know, tornado goes.
Well, they certainly used to be. I concur. Now, unfortunately, a lot of them are fat, obese mothers who go to pride parades and force their children to look at this filth. I don't know what that says about the state of affairs here, but it's not good. Yeah. Do you know how old Jimmy Carter is?
It's feminization that's going on, because it's a reaction against this sort of macho, you know, Superman American.
Right. No more alpha males.
Justice,
no more.
The American way, Superman, you know, now they want
alpha male.
Cute little supergirl.
No
Right. So it's real sad, because this is a culture-driven thing, which is really threatening America now at a time when you got a lot of foreign threats and this tremendous nuclear problem here. Losing wars, just lost Afghanistan now in the process, basically throwing in the towel in Ukraine. You know, that. So we're really on the downhill. As you said earlier, just now, we're really on the downhill, and we don't know where it's going to end now. It's really bad, I think. The next few years
it's horrific. There are a lot of people who are unfortunately injected with this mRNA death poison, and they're dying. Their lives are shortened. They are dying. 80% of the public here in this country was injected. Over almost 7 billion people on the planet. So by the way, do you know that Jimmy Carter is 98 years old now?
Yeah, he's a survivor. He's a tough nut.
Yeah,
I mean, amazing man. And I admire his Habitat program, building all these houses for people. I'm very aware of that now, since I've been back to the States, because I go to the Habitat stores to buy parts for buildings and all that, you know, scrap, building scrap. And unfortunately, what happened is you're supposed to work with Habitat to build your own house, and then also volunteer to help the next guy, right? Yeah, so you're doing like half of your house. Some guy, other guy who had his house done, is helping with your house, and you're going to help the next guy. A chain. But then all these people started feeling like they should get a free house from Habitat, and they shouldn't work. And so the whole, that was the fall of Habitat, is all these guys didn't want to, they wanted a free house, but they didn't want to work on earning that house. You know, it didn't cost them any money. They just had to put in the labor, and they would rather watch TV or go bowling or something. So it's really a part of kind of this terrible, you know, lack of sense of nationhood or community or help thy neighbor, the whole thing.
We've lost our identity. We have no more national identity. No, it's gone.
And the consequence is going to be horrible, you know. So you're absolutely right there.
Here's another thing, and I've seen it firsthand. Yoshi's been up in the Northwest, all up and down the West Coast, checking, actually, and examining dead seals and so forth. He's done the homework about the loss of our birds and bees. Over half the bees last year in this country, gone, dead. When I first saw it happen, it really set in about a year after Fukushima, and the first thing I did was put a greenhouse over my planting beds and protect them from the fallout. Now we have very few insects in this area, very few. No butterflies, not like it used to be. And what happens when the insects are wiped out? The birds go. They're gone.
Yeah.
That's what they eat.
Yeah.
And
you can see that in the supermarket. Yeah, you can see that in the supermarket where you're talking about. There's much less American honey, and more of it's coming from the Southern Hemisphere. So our beekeepers seem to be dying out along with the bees. You know? So,
it's true. All right, here's a letter from somebody in Olympia, Washington, because it doesn't stop with insects and the birds. It includes all small animals and ultimately us. We're in trouble too. Hi, I live in Olympia, Washington. I want to thank this person for writing in. I won't identify him or her. I live in Olympia, Washington, the Pacific Northwest. I have noticed insects disappearing the last few years, but this summer is so bad. All the birds, squirrels, and raccoons in my yard are skinny and probably starving. Since spring, I have seen five flies, two monarch butterflies, two moths, four small pale yellow butterflies, previously very common, and one dead baby slug. This spring into June was cooler than normal, although June was dry, but still it was slug weather. I have lived in the same house for 40 years and have generations of animals. Raccoons are nocturnal, but they have never bothered my compost bin or outdoor plants in pots. This summer, they are digging in the plants and the compost bin and diving there until I stop putting food in it. I have never used pesticides in my yard, and at least a couple of my neighbors don't either. Also, a couple have noticed the same issues I have. I Googled who I might talk to in Washington State about this and only got articles and places about pests. Any suggestions? So there's just one. And if you look on the right side of the homepage, scroll down, you'll see bugs and birds. You'll see it. Those are emails from people all over the country explaining about the change in the entire ecology. The insects are gone, then the birds go. I remember one guy wrote, I think I might have read this when you were on years ago. He said he used to go out and he has a farm light by his barn. You know, a farm light, everyone, you know what they are.
Yeah.
There's a big light up at the top. And he said the insects
buzz around that, yeah.
That's right. The insects were so thick, he said, he couldn't see the actual light. He could see the light, but not the physical light. It was covered with insects. He says, now, and this is several years ago, there are about 8 or 10 insects, and that's it. 8 or 10. That's it.
Yeah, those bug lights used to be like a feeding ground for swallows at night. Birds at night would swarm in and just scoop up a lot of insects. And the insects keep crowding in. So it was one of the most annoying sights to me to see all those flies and mosquitoes and all, and then cheering on the birds to eat them up. But right now there's no birds and no insects. Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah,
no, this...
I was in when I got back to the States more seriously. I was on the in Washington State visiting some friends, and we went out to the Olympic coast there. Interesting there is that's sort of a direct route from Japan, because that's where all the buoys from the Japanese, you know, fishing lines and Chinese fishing lines. You know, if they break loose in a storm or typhoon, they'll float over. That's one of the favorite collectibles. And that's at the Indian reservation, Indian reservation there, you can see these lines where the Indians collect them and hang them up. And you can actually see that the older buoys are not radioactive and the newer ones are highly radioactive, you know, coming from Japan. That was incredible. It's just right there, you know, that tells the story.
That's the North Pacific Current. And I would ask all of you who care about this, just type in North Pacific Current, pull up maps, and look, and you'll understand. It actually is the joining of a southern current coming down off the coast, the east coast of Japan, and one coming up from the bottom. They join together and make the North Pacific. They come straight across the Pacific, and basically they'd hit land if they were. Oregon State, Washington, probably more Washington, but what happens to it, it splits. Half of it, or thereabout, goes north up along the British Columbia coast, and the other half goes down the west coast, carrying the radiation with it. That's how it gets here.
Well, unfortunately, part of it goes into Puget Sound, too. And that's one of the concentrations of American naval power. So, you know, it's really disturbing that here you go, you know, one of the most powerful naval bases in the world being steadily contaminated by this radioactivity. Very chilling thought, you know.
Bremerton.
You know, the repercussions of this are just go far beyond anything one can imagine.
But it's not talked about in the mainstream media, so it can't be real, huh?
No, see, that's highly radioactive.
That's the joke.
There in Puget Sound. Yeah.
It's
ostrich, you know, it's the ostrich in the head in the sand effect. People think, well, this will blow over. Well, it's getting worse. It's not blowing over. And now, it's all along the whole south, the east coast, all the way into Canada. And it's basically essentially swirling around toward northern Europe. So nobody's free. The Western civilization we're talking about is being terminated, okay? And this is what's going on, and it's being terminated very fast. an historic time. This is an eye blink, you know. 100 years is nothing, but this is happening way less than that. We're talking about a dozen years. Maybe, probably within our own lifetime. I'm getting up there in age, but probably I'm going to see the real collapse of Western civilization as the population gets killed off, the animals get killed. And as this woman said, raccoons are really tough, you know? Yeah, they got incredible livers. They got the tough fur. They're survivors. Not to see that. And the other problem, I think everyone who has a garden in the United States knows that the monarch butterfly is in deep, deep, deep trouble. You know that because of the dip of the jet stream when it goes down in the summertime. Toward Mexico, the Yucatan Peninsula, the monarchs are being really wiped out in the last couple of years. They're really getting hit. The jungle areas where they live, these very deep, dense forests, are now being penetrated by radioactivity and wiping out the monarchs. There's a huge Save the Monarch movement in the States, but there are not very many of them left to save, you know, so...
No. No.
People are planting all these flowers for them and all that, but they're becoming a disappeared species, which was once one of the most continentally widespread species coming out of that corner of Central America and Mexico, all wiped out. So this is really a termination crisis where life on Earth is beginning to come to a final. And the entire food chain is coming to an entire dead end. Yeah,
we're at the end of the line, no doubt.
Yeah,
this lady.
Oh
yeah, of course. The lady says, "We got to take a break here." The lady says, "I have seen 5 flies, 2 monarch butterflies, 2 mm-hmm. moths, 4 small pale yellow butterflies, and 1 dead baby slug since spring.
Yeah.
That's it."
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah, it's the end. It's the end.
Words to the wise.
It's up and down the whole coast, up and down the backbone of the country. We're in the death throes. You know, let's face it, where it's going to become unlivable, and we know that the grain crops are failing in Midwest because all the flowers are being decimated by, you know, they all require, you know, florets, all your wheat, barley, everything you eat all comes out of a flower. All of those are dying because the insects that pollinate them are all dead, okay? We're really coming to an end. And then we've got a government that did this idiotic war in Ukraine, and which caused the Russian retaliation. The Russian didn't want to do this, but they just retaliated yesterday and wiped out the Ukrainian grain silos. They wiped out the grain fleet. We're heading for a global starvation.
Right.
Global
Famine.
Starvation.
You got it.
Famine. And you're going to have a gun when people try to come into your house to get your pancake
back. Take your
back.
Food.
That's how it's going to
be. Do not
that's
tell anyone.
You're going to have to kill people to save your pancake batter.
It's,
so you
got to
understand what's coming. This is the war of the zombies. We're being reduced to something subhuman. We're no longer human. You know, we're zombies now.
I'm afraid you're right. Stand by. We'll be right back with Yoshi in just a couple minutes. Hang on. Okay. We are spending some time with one of the world's great environmentalists, former editor of the Japan Times Weekend Edition, a man who has put his life on the line to bicycle into the Fukushima exclusion zone 12 times, 13 times, a lot of times, and then detoxed himself afterward very carefully. It took a long time, but he was able to get most all of the radiation out of his system. So he has done there, been there, done that, and is a man of his word. So if you ever want to read anything interesting, just look on the left side of the homepage and look for Yoichi Shimatsu. Look for his essays. They're all fascinating reading, all of them. Now, as far as my situation here in Southern Oregon, it has been bad. Very few, if any, ants. Very few, if any. I don't think, I might have seen one swallowtail butterfly. That's it. And the woman in Seattle is correct. Very few flies. I can leave the front door open, and then the house will not fill up with house flies. It's just a donut.
True,
I saw
true,
one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're all gone. And I used to get, Yoshi, I used to get beautiful orioles, all kinds of songbirds, sparrows, migrating birds, blackbirds. No more. All gone. One or two crows, maybe. Even few buzzards. There aren't as many buzzards as there used to be. There's just not many. The insect life has pulled the rug out from underneath so many species, and their futures are bleak.
No, absolutely. Same. I'm in the Southwest. Same thing. It's been an apocalypse for the native wildlife. Used to be a lot of buzzards, not many dead animals anymore. Most of the rabbits were wiped out. Rattlesnakes, even, you know, these are hardy things, live underground. Virtually disappeared, used to be abundant. Haven't seen a snake, dead snake on the road for 2 years now here. So it's crazy. And so, yeah, this is a total continental wipeout. And maybe, and I notice a lot of Mexican people are coming across the border to buy food. So it's not just here. It's worked, this famine is working its way deep into Mexico, you know, where, you know, these are very hardy people. But they've got to come up here to the Walmarts and to the Dollar Trees and all to do their shopping.
Really?
Because they're crop failures. Crop failures across the Rio Grande. They're coming across to buy their food and stocking up, you know, buying large amounts. And so there is definitely a panic going on. One of the interesting things, you know, this whole food crisis got me thinking, there's a lot of mesquite bushes around here. So I've been looking at mesquite beans and asking around to old timers, and they said, well, it's a lot of work, you know. To gather them, to process them, to rinse them. And the problem is they're
mesquite,
very bitter.
That's what you're saying.
Mesquite beans, yeah, like mesquite wood is used for charcoal. But the beans, they're like long string beans. But the problem is high alkaloid content. And, you know, the Indians were more adapted to it through natural selection. You know, those who had weak kidneys died, essentially. And the survivors ate these. So we don't have a real good backup. No plants that can, you know, the mesquite can survive radioactivity. It's in some harsh desert. It'll grow in nuclear bomb sites and all that, like Alamogordo, the test site. You'll see these things bouncing right back. The problem is our bodies, of those of us who haven't lived in the Southwest for the last 1,000 years, our families are not from here, it doesn't look like we would, you know, it looks like we'd have kidney disorders and die after eating those. So this is a real problem. All, you know, our natural food sources, you think, well, I can go out and shoot a deer, but what's the deer been eating? I'm not sure we, you know, we're so soft as Americans, you know, that I'm not sure we've got it in us anymore to do what the pioneers did and the Native Americans
did
200, 300 years ago. You know, we don't have the same mettle. We don't have the spunk that they did. We don't have the toughness. So this is a problem. We can't go back. We burnt our bridges to the past, and our bridge to the future is gone. So we're really in a jam now. And now this, you know, why did the NATO, why did they start this war in the breadbasket of the world? You know,
to create a famine. They want to reduce the food to help depopulate the planet. That's famine.
Yeah, but the problem is, who's going to get depopulated? The hungry natives. You know, you remember those old cartoons where they put the missionary, the white guy, into a kettle and boil them?
You bet.
That's going to happen again. That's going to happen again, you know? You weak Americans who are used to a nice fat diet, you're not going to be running the world. You're not going to be saying you can't come into Costco. No, they're going to come in and they're going to take you, the manager, the white guy, and put you in a boiling pot and cook you. You know?
Listen,
and,
there's something you're saying. Yoshi, there's something you're saying. I personally think that cannibalism is going to make a comeback before this is all over. It probably already is.
I think it already has. I think there is already this fake meat and all that, you know, that undying meat, you know, fake meat meat cells that remain alive forever. So forever meat. But how are they going to replace it when all these plants are gone? They have to replace it with human tissue. See, they're preparing us for cannibalism. They're going to use human tissue as a foundation. You know, this is a Soylent Green, you know, except it's not green, it's red. It's a permanent, everlasting meat by chewing up bodies, putting them in a grinder, and then reproducing them.
Yep.
And these are your hamburgers, and your hamburger stand are going to be human, okay? So we're really heading very rapidly into that direction. It's not a joke, you know, it's not science fiction at this point. It's just science reality, and these people are ruthless, you know, what's in a hot dog or hammer, come on, you know. You know, so it's very savage, and once that happens, we start to become like the Aztecs. You know, once you become a cannibal, it gets pretty rough after that. It's either you or, you know, it's us against them or me against the world, you know. It gets very, very rough if you read the Aztecs. You know, the Spaniards are considered horrible, racist, and not bigoted, religious bigot. But you can't really read too many of the actual records of the guys who were with Cortez writing about these, you know, when 2,000 people are sacrificed and they're slaughtered for the meat. And these very eco-eroded areas of Mexico where all the trees were cut down, all the animal grass was eaten up, and they had to raid other tribes to eat, and they slaughtered 2,000 at a time in a festival, cut their hearts out. So you remove the blood is the first thing, then you can preserve the meat. So this was a norm in America. You know, there was cannibalism all over among the Native Americans. There was cannibalism was a pretty standard, like Last of the Mohican. You see the guy rip the guy's heart out and eat it, you know? So, you know, his enemy's heart. So we're unfortunately, I think, because of food scarcity, the collapse of the ecosystem, and it's all our own fault, the man-made collapse of this thing.
Right.
We're moving back to a primitive, very basic primitive way of survival, which is not going to be very nice, because if you're a woman, you know, the government's going to tell you, you're going to give us your first three kids, okay? They're going to the meat processing plant, and we'll allow you one kid to survive. This is the kind of world we're moving into, and we're moving into it very, very rapidly in our lifetime. I didn't think I'd see it in my lifetime. Oh, I'm seeing it happen right now. We're moving toward
it's
that.
Fast-tracked. A couple things, a couple notes on cannibalism. Mm-hmm. I am told that you can go into any major city to some of the, mm-hmm. quote, higher-end restaurants, and if you know what to, mm-hmm. ask for, you can get human meat. It's there. There's a supply. Then I also want to point out that I don't know how many abortions are done every year by Planned Parenthood and others.
Right.
But that, let's say the average aborted fetus weighs, 2 pounds? I don't know, a pound and a half?
Yes.
If they do a couple of million abortions a year?
Yeah.
That's a couple million pounds of meat.
Yeah, replacement organs. Yeah, it's replacement organs. But on the other hand, if you don't have livestock anymore, you know, which are too expensive to grow because you don't have natural resources to feed all these bales of hay to feed these cattle and sheep and all that, then the only nutritious meat, the most nutritious meat for you is monkey meat, you know, human meat, because it's got all the proteins you need. Yeah. So, this is, and humans will eat anything, too. You can feed people all kinds of garbage, and they'll still make human meat. So this is a grim thought. The science fiction, Soylent Green and all that, you know, it's happening now, and these governments are promoting this. They just wiped out, they just deliberately provoked the Russians to do this. They didn't have to do it. They did this very intentionally to cut off the world food supply, okay? So these people, the global elitists have gone just totally mad on us. They're just maniacs, so. Something's got to be done. We're really facing a situation. Something really, really got to be done very, very soon. And the Bidens of the world can't be allowed to push us ever closer to this, you know, the cannibal world. You know, that's what they're doing. You know, you see a Hunter Biden, I'm sure he's crazy. He looks like he's eating brains. You know about that Kuru disease? The Japanese soldiers who ate, that comes from the word, Japanese word kuru, which means round and round, like in your brains, round and round because your brains aren't working. And they base that on eating human, kuru disease. It developed in the New Guinea in the campaigns there when Japanese soldiers were starving, were eating other people. And then it traveled up through the Japan food chain, where the main research center, I did this work at Japan Times during the mad cow disease, because the mad cows were being fed embryos, so that it's for milk cows. In Switzerland, they fed human embryos to the cattle for better milk consumption, and also milk that's not an allergen for people, okay? So they fed them human tissue of the cattle to do that. And then in researching it, I found out that the main research center for the Kuru disease is in Japan, in Hokkaido, northern Japan. And I gave them a call and asked them, do they freeze out, you know? They just, you know, they refuse to answer their phones for the next month. Well, during the sort of mad cow disease, it was like, you're not supposed to know this stuff, you know? So there is, you got to understand, a lot of your products, especially Switzerland, Swiss chocolates, are basically based on aborted fetuses fed to cattle to increase milk production, but also to make milk products palatable to humans. That's, you know, so this is
I
reality.
Didn't know
you
that.
Know? I mean, you didn't know that about Swiss chocolate. That's why I eat only Belgian chocolates. I eat only Belgian chocolate, never Swiss chocolate.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And this was revealed by someone at the Zurich Zoo during the Kuru outbreak. And I was one of the few people in the world who actually picked up that story and went for an interview. You know, I didn't go there for an interview, but asked for the documents and all that, and they sent me the stuff from the Zurich Zoo that this was a standard practice to increase milk production and better milk.
If
you like chocolate, already a cannibal. You are already a cannibal, okay?
No exaggeration. Right. By the way, they found human cells in McDonald's burger patties. They found human cells, fetal cells. In burgers. So that's where some of that, ultimately, that Planned Parenthood goes. I'm telling you, it does.
That's from using dairy cattle, because the standard thing here in the States, too, is use fetal tissue. You know, they don't call it that. They won't admit it, but they do to increase milk production. So human byproducts are fed to cattle, and that's why I don't drink any milk or take any ice cream or any milk products. Precisely because I believe once you're hooked to these things, you're basically in the cannibal zone. You're no longer human. You're something, you know, anti-human. You've got this craving. You've got this deep craving for human flesh, you know, for human protein. And I refuse to eat any milk products and also anything resembling dairy cow. I won't eat those kind of cheap burgers and all that.
I stopped dairy, about... 30 years ago, I don't ever eat dairy products.
Yeah. No. The lighter burger meat is usually made out of dairy cow meat. The lighter burger is not really Angus beef. So the only beef I'll eat basically is Angus because they're grass-fed out in the wilds, and they don't contain human particles, you know, cells. Whereas most of your dairy cattle go into these big burger chains and all that. The cheaper chains. Yeah,
they only milk them for four or five years. That's the max. After 4 or 5 years, they just off to McDonald's.
And they're ground up and all that. The problem is, once you get a dependency, I think, on human meat, that's why these people blow up.
You're saying it's addictive.
That.
This is interesting.
Yeah, they blow up and they get these cravings, you know, and uncontrollable cravings. And this is precisely a feature of cannibalistic societies, this tremendous craving for this kind of pale meat, you know, rather than deep red meat, you know.
So, by the way, to amplify what you're saying, I read the there's a book. There was a great novel written. It was a historical novel called Aztec. Aztec,
yeah.
And it was the story of the Aztecs, as told by allegedly some of the Spanish conquistadors who were there, and they went through the whole thing. Well, when they would sacrifice these people at the top of the pyramid, pull their hearts out, they would simply pick them up and throw them over the side, and they'd fall, tumble down the steep sides of this pyramid.
That's right.
What was at the bottom? Tens of thousands of people waiting to grab a body, and they were right there on the scene, butchers who would butcher the corpse, and you'd pay them, and then you'd carry home your thighs or your legs or your arm, whatever.
Yeah.
They would butcher them right on the spot.
Yeah. That's not fiction. That is reality in the Spanish records. And that's why the Jesuit order, they did all the research on it, and then they took all the stuff to Europe, their documents, and they're hidden, in the Vatican, either the Jesuit Center in Assisi or the Vatican Center.
It?
The books
the
are
Mormons.
Hidden, you know?
There was a Mormon group that studied this, and they published it in the L.A. Times, and the Latino community went berserk. And the L.A. Times had to drop the story, and I think they recanted somehow. But yes, true.
It's true. It's very much true. There's still, that's why you have all these snuff movies and all that in Mexico. There is a craving in that society of those that bloodstream, because it's just like guys who start getting into Kobe steak or getting into, these exotic meats. You know, guys who are deer hunters, they sort of get addicted to those proteins, and the body, the whole digestive system sort of gears toward those proteins. And then once it's there, it's very hard to get off, It's hard to be a vegetarian after you've been a meat eater. And if you eat specific kinds of meat, it's hard to get off those types of meat, because your body's so dependent on that anymore, And then also, let's say, beef, human meat, and all that tends to build up your internal organs. You get larger organs, which need sustenance, whereas weaker people have smaller organs, vegetarians. So this is a real problem. I'm not an advocate of vegetarians by no means, but I'm, I say eat meat at your own risk of your, sanity, your health. And your humanity, sanity and humanity, eat at your risk, and don't go into that beyond meat, because that is, God knows what that's really all about. I think it's a project, so anyway, those are the weird things that's coming out of this Fukushima crisis, is the kill-off is pushing our civilization into absolute total savagery.
I agree.
And,
by the way,
you see that
thing.
And what's happening. I hate to say, the Ukraine war is not your normal war. It's not a war of strategy. It's not a war of resources. It's not a war of better training. This is some sort of war aimed toward cannibalism, destruction of crops,
destruction
of farmers. They're taking all the best farmers and killing them off. It's an experiment. They want to experiment on the Slavs. Some race that they, on another, race of, partially Caucasian people to see how this experiment goes for the future. And
You're onto something here.
This is the Davos crowd. This is the Bill Gates crowd.
Davos and their major organs are being sold off. Everybody who's wounded there is running a 50-50 chance, somebody wrote, that their organs are going to be harvested.
And who eats most of the... who eats most of the organ meat in the Western world? The Jewish people do, They're the great eaters, liver and all that, So these groups here, which the Davos Club represents, there's something more than just economics there. There's something very bloodlust involved in this thing.
Well, adrenochrome, take it from there.
Yeah.
By the way, the deer populace, for those... who are thinking they're just going to go out and harvest a few deer and feed the family. 37 states report mad deer disease.
Yeah.
That's mad cow in deer.
Yeah.
That's prions, and that means prions not just in the brain, but anywhere in that animal. Where the blood goes, the prion proteins go. Okay? You cannot eat that.
Yeah.
You can't do it. You're running
again,
a big risk.
Again, my research in Japan showed those aberrant prions are from the Kuru disease. So it started in humans, and it's been passed to animals, to cattle, then to deer, okay? So, you know, this is a disease of cannibalism that's spreading into wildlife and destroying our meat. So it's really diabolical, right? We want to turn humans into a race of cannibals. You know, you attack their meat supply, so you become more and more put human diseases in the natural meat, and then force people eventually to come to terms by eating the real thing, eating their children, basically. So it's a sick thing that's going on. And again, why would you intentionally destroy the world's grain supply by destroying the, you know, by involving the port of Odessa in this war with Russia, you know, and using all these dirty tricks and all that to try to goad the Russians into fighting back? And the Russians, they're going to do it. They're going to say, we're going to give you what you want. I think the Russian strategists understand what's going on, you know, and they're saying to the Western Europeans, if this is what you want, this is what you get. You know, go ahead, eat each other up and save us, you know, save us the effort of wiping you out.
Last quick note, as most all of you listening know, the alleged government of Ukraine is all Zionist Bolshevik, all of it. And what they're doing with this war is a holocaust of young, basically young, male Christians. They're killing them all off, so nobody will rise up against the Bolshevik dictators that are running that country. This is a slaughter, a human sacrifice. This is a holocaust. Maybe 400,000 dead to date. Maybe. We don't know for sure. But Yoshi's right.
And then
okay, my friend.
Why were their ancestors driven out of China? Okay, the Khazar ancestors. Why did the Chinese drive them out? What we're talking about. Choice of meat.
You might want to write something about this at some point.
This is a common thing for sure. All the vampire stories are all about this. You know, all about these people.
I hope you're right about this, because you know you could tie it all together. It's there.
It's horrendous. It's just brutally disgusting.
It's anti-human. It's not human.
We do have vampires in our midst. You know, we've got to understand that we've had that. It's been understood for hundreds of years. Yeah, and we think we can save everybody.
Us.
Everyone's equal. Come on.
No.
All right.
Not a chance. Hey, talk soon, Yosh. Thank you. You be
very
well.
Good.
Be
okay.
safe.
Yeah. Bye bye now.
Okay. Good night. What a great human being. Okay. Thank you for being here. Back tomorrow in 21 hours. Lots to think about. Talk soon. Take care.